More than 30 years ago, the Philadelphia police took an unusual step in their attempt to uncover the identity of a dead child found in the woods. They dressed the corpse up in pants and a shirt, posed the body on a chair, and then photographed him. That photograph found a permanent place in the memory of writer Seymour Shubin. It's the basis for Shubin's new mystery novel, Never Quite Dead. This is the opening passage, read by Seymour Shubin.
He opened the door from the kitchen to the basement and looked down at the darkness before turning on the light. Walking down, he had the feeling of uneasiness he had had as a kid when he used to come down here, sometimes with his friends, to take the dead little boy's pictures out of his father's files and stare at them one by one with a mixture of fascination and horror. The poor little boy, as he used to think of him. The boy of 3 or 4 with the bruises on his head, someone had dumped on a vacant lot, and no one had ever come forward to identify. No mother or father, no aunt or uncle or cousin or neighbor or someone who might have just gotten a quick glimpse of him, like a door-to-door salesman or a repairman. Someone.
There's a true story that lies behind the novel, and you had seen pictures of a dead boy who was dressed up by the police so he'd look more real?
Yes, so he would look lifelike. At that time, I was a writer for a True Detective Story magazine. Now, this little boy was found in a cardboard box in a wooded section of Philadelphia. And he was nude, but he was covered with a blanket, and there were bruises on his body. The police thought he would be easy to identify, and of course, relatively easy to arrest whoever killed him. But his identity has not been known, is not known to this very day. And so this case has always, always gripped me, and you can say haunted me.
You had tried to write the story of this boy in fictional form, to imagine his story before, but it never quite worked until you wrote this book. What didn't work about the previous directions that you took?
I tried to write it as a straight thriller.
Mm-hmm.
And that is, first I took my own thinking, why wouldn't anybody come forward and identify this boy? So I thought, well, as far as a story goes, it could be that he was the son of a spy and the spies couldn't come forward, or it could be the president's illegitimate child, or there was some laboratory where some scientist was using children as experiments. And I would go so far with it, and then it would stop dead. It just didn't work. Now, it only started to work when I started to think of the boy in real terms. And I started to put into practice what I really believe about thrillers. You do not have to take the very high-tech and the very esoteric and make suspenseful stories out of them. You can take what could be the ordinary things of life. And this is suddenly I saw that this was somebody's child, and somebody killed him, and for some reason, nobody wants to name him.
You had a bestseller in 1953, Anyone's My Name. Your next novel came out in 1958, Manta. Then your next novel, Wellsville, in 1961. Your next book after that was 21 years later, in 1982, The Captain. What happened during those 21 years?
Well, I didn't exactly run away to Europe. I worked as a freelancer. I did a lot of medical articles. First of all, the first was a bestseller. The second two, you can call them worse sellers. They were not suspense. They were ordinary sellers. And I had a family to raise. I also went to work as a managing editor of a psychiatric journal. Meanwhile, it's very strange that I always knew that I was going to come back to the novel.
But you felt you couldn't make a living and support your family on writing novels.
No. And also, I was looking for the novel that would really do it. In other words, I was looking for the perfect, for the sure plot, which, of course, is a sure way not to write.
Right, because no plot will ever measure up,
no,
so you just don't write.
So I said, let me just write a novel and let it just come. So I wrote a first draft without reading back on it. And I saw that the things that held me back, well, like a preposition at the end of the sentence, believe it or not, it still would hang me up, let it go. And I sort of, it sounds very pretentious, but I found a voice for myself.
You've written, in your own words, bushels of stories for True Detective magazine. When was that in your career that you were writing for them?
This was in 1945 for about 15 years.
That's a long time.
Yes, but that wasn't all I did. In the middle, I wrote articles for the Saturday Post and Reader's Digest. And I also wrote my first novel, Anyone's My Name, which is really the story of a true detective story writer. I drew directly on my experiences, although I embellished it. It's not a autobiography, but the feelings are very much autobiographical.
What's the idea behind the true detective stories? That people want to read about crime, but if it's real, it's more interesting?
Yes. Now, it may have changed since I've done it, but the point they were interested then, they were interested in the crime, and they were interested in the pictures and the detective work. For instance, if a crime was solved by someone, a witness saw a license plate pulling away from the house, I mean, that's really not much of a detection. But you were allowed in those days to put down a button was found at the scene, and somehow that tied in with something else and something else. Now, that does not go today, from what I understand.
You mean making up that
making
a button
up,
was found?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes. So I was able to use my fictional abilities, and this bothered me a great, great deal. And if anyone can find Anyone's My Name, they'll see where my guilts came out. It came out in a murder that my surrogate commits. In other words, he finds himself in the same position as a killer, of these killers that he wrote so glibly about as a true detective story writer. So that did bother me. I used it as a means to an end.
Did it help you find a voice for writing?
I seem to have. It's very hard to say, because when I applied for this job, I knew nothing about true detective story writing. He gave me a manuscript to rewrite, and I just rewrote it, and he said, "You have the job." So there was something about it that I knew how to do.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, my first novel was, I was very surprised when it was called a thriller, because as far as I knew, it was just the story of a man who commits a murder. And for the next two books, I deliberately stayed away from suspense. And that's another thing that may have held me back during these 20 years. I looked down as a writer on the very thing I turned out to be pretty good at. It wasn't literature with a capital L, I thought. But then along the way, I found everything I do is filled with suspense. If I go to the newspaper store and I want a New York Times, sometimes I find myself heart beating a little fast. Will the Times be in? Will it be sold out? driving in today, will the snow, will someone ram in? And suspense just fills my life anyway. Some people might call it anxiety. All right, I'll call it.
That's right. You write stress novels.
Right. I call it suspense.
The main character in your new novel is a writer also, and he writes mystery novels. And it's a series of novels with a detective named Cade. And I was wondering why you never took that direction yourself of having a series.
I want to write something relatively new each time. So I find if I have a series and if I have a character, I want to think more than rather go to the same character. I'd rather think of something new. My preference in suspense is writing about people who somehow, almost against their knowing it, take on the role of detectives. But they are not officially detectives. They just run across this in the course of their life. This is something that happens to them. And I find that more interesting to me.
When your imagination runs free about crime, do you see yourself as the potential criminal or the potential victim?
A little bit of both. A little bit of both. But again, I have to stand back from it.
In order to tell the story.
To tell the story. And part of this book, I don't know if you got it out of it, but only about half of it is a traditional mystery. And then it changes into something else. What I could consider maybe psychological suspense, and which is sort of a risk for me to have taken. But I'm interested in the whys and hows rather than who done it, is why done it, and will he done it again?